Everyone wants to be successful. But what is success? For some, it is getting ahead or climbing the corporate ladder. For others, it is accumulating money, lots of money. But whatever one's definition of success, there seems to be a link or connection between success and what we call or think of as happiness. The book known as the Bible describes one man's quest for success and happiness. From all outward appearances, he was successful and happy. But inwardly, something was missing, and he knew it. The section of the Bible known as Ecclesiastes gives a first-hand account of this man's fascinating search for true success. It instructs each of us on what will never work, and then gives the key to success and lasting happiness. Stay tuned. The author of Ecclesiastes is King Solomon. He ruled over all of Israel from 970 to 931 before the Common Era. And he was considered the wealthiest man of his day and was known for his great wisdom. We are told that his gift of wisdom and great wealth were given to him by God. Notice in the Bible, 1 Kings, the 3rd chapter, verse 5. At Gibeon, the Eternal, or the Lord, appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, "Ask, what shall I give you?" Honestly, consider, what would you ask for if you were given the same opportunity? Would it be riches? Would it be good health? Would it be fame? What would it be? Notice Solomon's remarkable request. "Now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" This is not the response of the average man or woman. Sadly, too many believe that success and happiness are reached through becoming wealthy and or famous. Gambling has become an obsession for many in the Western world. People think, if only I could win the lottery, it would solve all of my problems. But would it, really? Wealth of itself is not a bad thing, but in the end, it will not buy a happy marriage because it cannot buy the character to do what it takes to have a happy marriage. Money does not train us to live patiently, to live in harmony with one's neighbor, or to exercise kindness on a daily basis. Without these, no one will truly be happy. Jesus commanded, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." But the mantras of today's world are, take care of number one, meaning yourself, and live for today. So what was God's response to Solomon's request for wisdom? Let's notice. Then God said to him, "Because you have asked this thing and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days." The most famous example of Solomon's wisdom is of the time when two harlot women came before him for judgment. One woman gave birth to a son, and the other, who lived in the same house, gave birth to a son 3 days later. As it happened, one of the infants died in the night, and one woman accused the other of switching the infants. Since no one was in the house at the time except the two women, it was one woman's word against the other. There were no witnesses, no electronic lie detector tests, and no DNA test. It all came down to one woman's word against the other, or so it seemed. How would you decide? What judgment did Solomon render? Let's notice. And the king said, "The one says, 'This is my son who lives, and your son is a dead one.' And the other says, 'No, but your son is a dead one, and my son is a living one.' Then the king said, 'Bring me a sword.' So they brought a sword before the king. And the king said, 'Divide the living child in two, and give half to one and half to the other.' Then the woman whose son was living spoke to the king, for she yearned with compassion for her son, and she said, 'O my lord, give her the living child, and by no means kill him.' But the other said, 'Let him be neither mine nor yours, but divide him.' So the king answered and said, 'Give the first woman the living child, and by no means kill him. She is the mother.' And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had rendered. And they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice." Solomon was not only wise, but he was also wealthy and famous. Much can be said of his wealth, so we will not take the time to describe all of it at this moment. But one incident in his life testifies of his wealth and fame. It is the visit by the Queen of Sheba. When she heard of his fame, she came to visit him, bringing with her a very large company bearing spices, gold, and precious stones. She tested him with difficult questions, and he answered them all. So impressed was she that this visit is recorded for us in 2 Chronicles, the 9th chapter. When the Queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, there was no more spirit in her. Then she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe their words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half of the greatness of your wisdom was not told me. You exceed the fame of which I heard. Happy are your men, and happy are these your servants who stand continually before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who delighted in you, setting you on his throne to be king for the Lord your God. Because your God has loved Israel to establish them forever, therefore he made you king over them to do justice and righteousness." One would think with such an endorsement, King Solomon would have felt that he was the most successful and happy person to ever live. But such was not the case. Perhaps it was because of his great wisdom that he was an introspective man, one who thought deeply about things. And in the end, all his fame, all his wisdom, all his wealth, all of his accomplishments left him empty and at the point of suicide. Why? Why? What was missing? Why did Solomon find success so difficult to find, giving all that he had? The book of Ecclesiastes describes Solomon's search for happiness, success, and well-being. This book is read by observant Jews during the Feast of Tabernacles, a feast that pictures the rule of the Messiah on the earth, a thousand-year period of peace and prosperity for all. God commands us, "Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household." For those of us who have observed this special feast, we learn that while God allows us to enjoy the fruits of our labors, happiness does not come by self-service, but by caring for and serving others. And Ecclesiastes is warning that true success and happiness do not come by way of material pursuits. Let us face it, Solomon had more than any of us can hope to have. He was, as the saying goes, filthy rich. Whatever he wanted, he could have. There was no limit. For those who think money and fame can buy happiness, Solomon should have been the happiest of all men. Yet he opens the book with the sad refrain, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." He describes his experiment in search of happiness and success this way, "And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were before me in Jerusalem." Solomon went on to say that he collected gold and silver in great abundance. He enjoyed the special treasures that only the most wealthy can enjoy. He surrounded himself with music, male and female singers, and all kinds of musical instruments. Surely this would bring him happiness, but did it? He tells us further, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun." How remarkable. We are told elsewhere in Scripture that Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. These were wives with lesser standings. So we see that wine, women, song, wealth, great building projects, and fame did not bring Solomon happiness. Yet how many people think that given the same circumstances, they would be happy, they would feel successful? Somehow it would be different for them. How tempting it is to think that way. Be honest with yourself. Is that what you think? Yet for Solomon, it did not bring him the success and happiness he sought. Instead, it brought him to near suicide. He considered the difference between being wise and being a fool, and concluded that it was better to be wise, but in the end, one is no better than the other. So I said in my heart, "As it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise?" Then I said in my heart, "This also is vanity, for there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does the wise man die? As the fool. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. For all is vanity and grasping for the wind." So if fame, fortune, and great earthly achievements do not equal success, what does? What did Solomon conclude? What was the lesson he left for you and me? Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all." Some years ago, the American pop singer Peggy Lee sang a mournful song titled, "Is That All There Is?" In it, she describes how her house burned down when she was a little girl. And when it was all over, she is left wondering, "Is that all there is to a fire?" And the chorus follows, "Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball, if that's all there is." She next describes going to a circus at the age of 12 and later falling in love. And in each case, when it is all over, she again asks herself, is that all there is? And again she counsels, if that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball, if that's all there is. Perhaps this explains why so many who seem to have so much end up taking their lives either deliberately or by accidental overdose from some drug taken to numb the pain. Elvis Presley, Kurt Cobain, Michael Jackson, Anna Nicole Smith, Marilyn Monroe, just to name a few. And let us not forget all the ugly, painful divorces among those who seem to have it all. The problem is that man is searching for happiness in all the wrong places. We have a yearning for happiness and success, but we don't know how to achieve it. The prophet Isaiah counsels us in Isaiah 55, "Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Yes, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend money for what is not bread and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good and let your soul delight itself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Hear and your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you." It is easy to equate fun and pleasure with happiness, but they are not the same. Fun and pleasure are temporary. They often come from outside stimuli. Happiness, on the other hand, comes from within and is the result of having a right understanding of the purpose for life and working in life toward that purpose. When Peggy Lee sang, "Is That All There Is?", it was a recognition that all the things in life we consider so important are not such a big deal after all. She offered no solution to the problem other than getting drunk and seeking temporary pleasure. The Apostle Paul, when discussing the subject of life after death, explored the reality if there is no such thing as a resurrection. Notice 1 Corinthians. "If in the manner of men I have fought with beasts at Ephesus, what advantage is it to me if the dead do not rise? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Of course, Paul was arguing the point that there is a resurrection. And when Solomon said, "Fear God and keep His commandments," it was a recognition that success and happiness come from character, duty, and a greater purpose to life than that which is temporary. And Isaiah is telling us to stop chasing that which will never satisfy and turn to the only solution that will, knowing the one who created us and seeking Him while He may be found. So what is the purpose of life? Do you know? Think for a moment. If you live to be 100 years of age, if you have a wonderful marriage with a child or two, delightful grandchildren and great-grandchildren, all the money to buy everything that your heart desires, and great status in the world, could you truly say you are a success if you never learn why you are here? What is your purpose for existing? Think about it. Seriously. It is difficult for us to believe one day we will be no more. Even when considering death, we sometimes think about what people will think of us, what they will say, and we hope that gives some satisfaction. But if there is no life after death, what difference does it make? Why worry about children to carry on your name? You'll not be there to know about it. There's no pleasure in the grave from anything you've accomplished. My Uncle George was an atheist. He was also an inventor, and he made instruments for the oil drilling industry, and at one time he was the only one making a specific, very sophisticated tool. He expressed to me one day that he did not want to die and not pass that knowledge along to some faithful student. But my question was, why? What difference does it make? If we are all the product of blind chance, who cares whether we live or die? In the end, our sun that gives light and heat will cease to shine. And right now, there does not seem to be any other planet anywhere close by that will take Earth's place. Life as we know it will become a part of cosmic nothingness. That is, unless there truly is a God, and his plan includes life after death. King David grew up as a shepherd boy. He often slept out beneath the open skies, and he looked up into the heavens. In the 8th Psalm, he muses, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with glory and honor. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth." David compared the smallness of man against the backdrop of the limitless universe. Yet he understood that one who created the heavens and the earth had a purpose for man. He recognized that purpose included rulership. The author of the book of Hebrews quotes this Psalm of David, but gives a more complete answer to God's great purpose that he is working out here below. Notice it in chapter 2, beginning in verse 8. "You have put all things in subjection under his feet," that is, man's feet. "For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him." If it is God's plan to put all things, the entire universe, under man's control, why are we confined to this planet and to making excursions to the moon and back? And that with great difficulty and hazard. Think. Everything man does ends in war and fighting. We cannot get along with our neighbors, whether individually or as nations. Mankind's whole history is a chronicle of war. The desire to dominate and rule others brings out the worst in man. And if we were truly able to travel to the stars, we would bring the same attitude we find on Earth with us. It truly would be Star Wars. So what is God working out here below? Continuing in Hebrews, the second chapter, beginning in verse 10, we read, "For it was fitting for him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, and bringing many sons to glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For both he," that means Christ, "who sanctifies, and those who are being sanctified," in other words, those who are Christ's, "are all of one, for which reason he is not ashamed to call them brethren." Yes, we have the potential of being brothers and sisters of Christ in a very real sense. Paul tells us in Romans 8, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption," more properly translated, sonship, "by whom we cry out, Abba, Father," or "Daddy, Father." The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. My friends, do you grasp what he is saying? Look it up. Read it for yourself. He's talking here about a father-son relationship. We are to be the very children of God. That is why we call him Daddy, Father. And we are to be brothers and sisters of Jesus Christ, heirs with him of the entire universe. Notice again what we are told in 2 Corinthians. "I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters," says the Lord Almighty. This helps us to understand the importance of family. God has given us the institution of family to teach us about a great family that he is creating. That is why it's so important to learn what true success is. to learn why you are here. If you would like to learn more about this subject, go to our website listed on the screen, where you can read or download our free booklet titled Your Ultimate Destiny. This easy-to-read booklet explains what ultimate success is. So check us out. I look forward to seeing you again next week, same time, same station. See you then.
If you would like to discover more about how today's topic impacts your life, then take the time to examine the free literature offered on this program at tomorrowsworldhk.com. Find real answers to life's most puzzling and challenging questions at tomorrowsworldhk.com. At our website, you'll find valuable articles revealing God's principles for living an abundant and happy life, while providing rare insight into current and future events. So don't delay. Visit us now at tomorrowsworldhk.com.
The preceding program is produced by the Living Church of God.